So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review it.
Fuck, dude, that Sin Cara thing that I showed you, it wasn't even the sperm that's the controversy. It's he has a bulging dick coming out of his tights.
No, I didn't think it was sperm. I just thought it was like
I thought it looked like sperm. No, it's like white shit coming out of his arms. I thought that's what the controversy
was. Are you joking? Look, no, it's a giant cock.
I didn't see the cock.
Yeah, that's right.
Someone had to put a circle on it for me to note. I didn't even notice, dude. I'm looking more at this. That, what does that look like to you?
It doesn't look like...
Looks like jizz. Just, it's white. It looks like you just went through a fucking swimming pool of jizz.
That's disgusting. I don't think so. It just looks like... Well, it looks like ooze.
Secret of the Jizz. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
No, I don't think of that. Clearly, there's a phallic symbol there.
No way! Oh, my God.
Kiss it!
Go ahead. It's a nice-looking ass.
Vince!
It's broken. It's cracked.
Vince.
And watch. I can even make my ass do tricks. Watch this.
Riggle's
got a little kiss my ass. All right. Now, damn it. Kiss my ass.
Join the club.
Charter member. Is he going to do it?
Oh, I'm about to faint.
What if he passes, what if he passes gas? I don't believe it.
This is the greatest moment in the history of the WWE.
The way you shake it, I can't believe it. I ain't never seen a
ass like that.
The way you move it, you make my PB go doing, doing, doing. I don't believe it, it's almost too good to be true. I ain't never seen a
ass like that.
The way you move it, you make my PB go doing, doing, doing.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. What's happening, Wei?
Not a whole lot.
A lot is happening.
Oh, yes, I mean, yes,
a lot. What a week we have coming up.
Oh, boy. I can't.
It's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, of course, we have the MMA Expo coming up, in which we will be broadcasting live for 5 hours.
Each day.
Well, let's be clear for people, though. You'll be broadcasting for 5 hours, and I will be dropping in at times when I can.
Yeah, I understand you're being pulled in a lot of directions here.
Yeah. Of course, as some of you may know, I'm also a camera operator for the Fight Network, and so during the expo, I'll be constantly busy doing shoots, but I imagine for most of the time I should be free to join yourself and whoever decides to show up.
Being as someone that has gone to a number of conventions with the sole goal of doing one-on-one interviews, I think there's going to be a lot of waiting on these two podcasts.
Yeah, I don't doubt that either. I mean,
my over-under is 2 one-on-ones that will get done.
I think we'll get more. I think we'll get... I mean, we don't have to talk.
No, this is not a negative slant on anything. I'm just saying the reality of the situation trying to wrangle fighters when they're on somebody else's dime at these expos, very difficult.
No, so, I understand. Well,
so fear not, people. You'll get to hear lots of Wei Ting.
No, and even if you don't get to hear from me, that just means more time for you.
No, we've established this way. There's a baby face and there's a heel on this podcast.
Okay, whatever.
I don't like to use those terms, but people like you, they don't as much.
No, people like you more. This is stupid. Let's set this podcast
over. Well, I'm excited about this weekend, though. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm worried about my voice holding up for 10 hours.
You'll be fine. You'll have plenty of tap-out energy to help you out.
My goal is to not take a break during either of the podcasts.
Not even a bathroom break?
I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Yeah, cool.
If I have to piss, I will piss.
Well, we'll keep a bucket under the
No. I don't mean at the booth. I mean I will go to the washroom if need be. But
what are we going to do? Who's going to fill in for you?
I'm booking on the flyway. There are going to be no commercial breaks. There's no music. It's just going to be 5 hours. And then when you're done, when you get to this crazy end of our marathon, then you're going to come back Sunday for another 5 hours.
This is, of course, you know, internet connections permitting.
Dude, our internet connection, if it goes down, there is going to be a lawsuit.
Really? Wow. Okay. Well,
this internet connection better not go down.
This internet connection sounds like it'll be like Pentagon enforced internet connection.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Gonna be a lot of people down there. Just gonna grab people. If you're a guest there, if you're attending the expo, come by, say hi, and you can be on our podcast.
Absolutely,
it's a lot of fun.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Get
most.
A sticker.
Get a T-shirt.
A limited edition T-shirt.
Yeah.
And have a...
I don't even have one.
I don't have one either.
How limited are these?
Limited as in we just got them today, and there are... I don't know how many they were printing, to be honest. I think it's only like 100 or so.
Holy
so
cow.
So get there quick. These shirts are going to go fast.
We will save a bunch. We will save about, you know, a number between the 2 days, so...
Don't yeah, we're like not going to give them all out on the Saturday. Yeah. If you're planning to come Sunday, don't worry. There will be shirts on Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
So... What's going on in your life as you have fallen off the wagon and are back to your caffeine dependency here?
That's right. I had a coffee today. I had one yesterday. Even without doing this podcast, I'm actually enjoying the taste of coffee. What's wrong with me?
It's a great drink.
It is good. Yeah. Caffeine's great.
I just had one today.
Just had one?
Yeah.
You want to talk about drugs, John?
No, I don't want to talk about drugs. What a topic that started on
oh
Friday.
Oh, my God.
Man.
I know. A lot of you are very passionate about your views on marijuana and
pot
cigarettes.
Is like religion, man. It's just you talk about it, and it's instant feedback.
Gets people worked up, no yeah. doubt.
That's why it's almost – it's too easy a topic to talk about because yeah. it's guaranteed feedback. It's guaranteed you're going to have people on extreme
exactly
opposing views.
And that leads us to today's topic, abortion. Your thoughts, John? Pro or not?
For abortion? Oh, man.
I'm joking. Let's not talk about this. What are we
reviewing? I was ready.
What are we talking about?
We'll chat about it on the weekend.
Okay.
Raw.
Mm-hmm.
From 10 years ago, November the 19th of 2001.
Let's flash back, John. What were you doing at this time?
I was at O'Grady's Tap and Grill that night, and I met Dave Meltzer for the very first time.
This was the night.
Yep. He was there in town to promote Tributes,
uh-huh.
which they were doing. The Law had a publishing deal with Random House Publishing, and they just mm-hmm. put out Tributes. It was like this hardcover book, and I had bought the original Tributes that was just done... through this small publishing company, and then they redid it with this. It looked great. I still have it. It was a hardcover book. The photos looked excellent inside of it. And yes, I met Dave Meltzer that night at O'Grady's, and him and I watched William Regal kiss Vince McMahon's bare ass.
What was Dave's reaction to that?
It was Merrick I was talking to, who was like, he compared, they made Regal the Red Rooster of 2001. They've ruined his career.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay. Well, quite
For as much as we remember that, I don't think people think of Regal as the guy who kissed Vince's ass. It's not like his defining moment in wrestling.
Oh, absolutely not. And to be honest, watching this back, I didn't think it was that bad at all.
It was creepy.
Yeah.
I was actually more creeped out. The following Monday after this one was in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. where Vince paraded around with his ass hanging out for Jim Ross to kiss.
Oh, wow.
And that was one where I was at home, and I remember my mom walking into my room and looking at that on the TV. And that was one of the low points of my wrestling life.
So much so that you decided to move out.
Yeah, I left the next day.
I feel like as a wrestling fan, we all have our moments where we're watching this and then somebody walks in completely not understanding and just being horrified.
There's also bad moments that don't really register for you until you have an outsider watching with you. And suddenly you're putting yourself into their shoes of what are they thinking right now that mm-hmm. here I am in my room watching a 55-year-old man take his pants off and do tricks with his ass and ride around with a cowboy hat on with his ass hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
What's my son watching?
What did I do? What did I raise?
Wrestling was – there was a tough period to get through. Today it's like people will say they're embarrassed, but not at that level.
No.
It's not like you're mortified by what's happening. I can put up with shitty John Cena comedy or...
TNA, though. TNA is a different story. We've all seen some very embarrassing things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just this past Wednesday, or this past Thursday. The Thunder... Thong Thursday.
Well, wait till what we see tomorrow when Karen's got to pick the outfits. Oh, what do you think we'll see there?
Well, I will be sure to watch that alone and close the door to ensure none of my family
members... You should watch it with your mom and have her on the show some week.
Oh, yeah. Great idea.
Review Away's mom.
No. I don't think so.
No? What about Dad?
No.
He doesn't care for it either.
How about Granny?
Is your grandmother still around?
No.
We could have her on if you had wanted to.
Anyway.
We can have any of your family members on. I want to have your brother on sometime. He should join us.
No. Why don't we... Let's move on. I don't want to talk about all this extra bullshit. I just want to talk about pro wrestling today.
Okay, well, let's talk about it.
All right.
From Charlotte, North Carolina. You enjoy reviewing the Raw episodes.
Love it.
Why is that? The memories, the production values, what is it about the Raw specifically, as opposed to our pay-per-views that you enjoy so much?
Well, it is the fact that they are... You know what? I mean, I thought about it, and I feel myself... First of all, yes, because they are short, and thank God, with all the wrestling that needs to be watched this week, every week, I... love watching these shorter shows. But also, I think that I'm more of a fan of storyline often than I am of actual wrestling. It sounds harsh, but I think for me to care about a match, I need to know the storyline first. I need there to be some meaning behind it. And often when we watch these pay-per-views, all these undercard matches are completely meaningless with...
Christian and Al Snow.
Taken out of context, they just mean absolutely nothing, and they just they're kind of boring to watch. So I like watching the TV because it's nothing but exposition, nothing but storyline and less wrestling. So count me in the minority, perhaps, of the internet wrestling crowd that prefers storylines often to meaningless wrestling.
No, I think there's a lot of people who enjoy that aspect of it. And I will say that at the end of the week, if I have not watched what we're reviewing and knowing in the back of my head that, well, it's just a Raw episode I've got to watch, much easier to approach mentally than a 3-hour pay-per-view with no breaks.
Yeah.
Those are tough. You got to break those up.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, folks, we're not just watching this. We're taking notes.
Yeah.
Writing as we do this. Crazy.
Yeah.
So the show starts off with Mick Foley in Vince McMahon's corporate jet, and he's telling Vince that when he steps off the plane, he's done forever. And he leaves with Vince, who is eating away, and Vince says, good luck, and have a nice day. And this was pretty much a true-to-life depiction of what went on here. Mick Foley was tired of the company and left, and he would not return for a year and a half, more than that.
Yeah.
Holy... June of 2003 when he would come back, and he left. This was his final appearance for a long, long time.
Well, a year and a half. Come on.
In wrestling, that's a long time.
For Mick Foley, I suppose that is a long time, but I feel like we've seen so many instances of these leavings with Mick Foley, always to see him come back. I think he's a very... He's a guy who holds a very high standard for himself and for the company that he works with, it seems. And he often feels that he's unhappy with creative and just leaves as a result. And this was one of many instances of that. In the future, he would be unhappy with his role as a commentator, unhappy with his role in TNA, only to leave in,
Well, for Mick Foley's sake, I'm glad he left at the beginning of the show, when he was fed up, versus having to sit through this show, because my head was fucking spinning at the booking on this show and trying to get everything in alignment of what was happening.
Well, yeah. Well, should we recap what had happened but prior to this?
Download last week's episode.
Okay. Well, in a quick summary, basically, this the invasion angle had just ended the night prior at Survivor Series, and it basically featured Kurt Angle representing Team WCW, turning on Team WCW, and helping...
After he had been eliminated, where he helped the Alliance for 32 minutes.
Yeah, after beating up on his supposed allies, secret allies, for 30 minutes, he turned and helped the WWF regain control of the wrestling world. And that's where we are today. Stone Cold is supposedly... Well, yeah, let's get to the show.
All right. By the way, if you go to download, I just want to make mention of this. If you go to download last week's show, the archives are complete.
Wow.
The Review Away archives are complete. Now I got to tackle all the Law episodes and put those together. But right now, if you go to fightnetwork.com/podcasts, you can simply scroll through. They're all in chronological order. Every Review Away is there for download.
Well, thank you, John, for doing that. From all of us.
You're welcome. They are all available, and... hopefully people want to go check them out, because it took me forever to put these all together. What a horrible landmine of a situation we were in.
And so you can all enjoy that. Enjoy the landmine.
Yes. I think it's all okay right now.
You defused.
What killed me was that period where we were having problems with the turnover, and we put all the shows on Podbean. Podbean.
Are you going to go on a rant against Podbean?
I should post the back and forth emails I've had with Podbean. Yeah. Not impressed.
They're not fun to deal with.
No.
And as...
There's nothing wrong. Really. There's nothing wrong. Why is this stuff not showing up?
Yeah. Well, what is do we have an update on when we can, fix that? Fix the Podbean situation, perhaps move ourselves from Podbean for our iTunes.
Yeah, it's in the process. I don't want to say anything right now because nothing is concrete. Okay. But me and Wei are working out a solution.
We are.
For things. And confident we're going to get this, we're going to update our lives into the year 2004 at least.
Yes.
Instead of this ridiculous caveman Podbean situation.
Okay. On with the show.
The show begins with Jim Ross announcing that the WWF is alive. They are alive. And he has an empty seat next to him, which was previously occupied by Paul Heyman, and he says he doesn't know who is going to join him. Vince McMahon comes out, already the second time we've seen him tonight, and says that despite Foley's resignation, it's a night of celebration. Now, why would he be upset that the Alliance... Wasn't he the Alliance Commissioner? No, he was the WWF Commissioner, wasn't he?
Foley, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yep. Christ. I can't even keep that. They had dual commissioners.
Yes.
For fuck's sake.
Yes, Regal was the Alliance
All right, so Foley was the WWF Commissioner, and he resigned. Says that one man deserves a debt of gratitude, and that is Kurt Angle. And says that because of him, WCW and ECW are dead. Which, after months and months of fighting, this got boos. You've killed WCW and ECW.
Did it get booze?
It got a bit of booze.
Yeah.
More so ECW, because he said them individually. Right. WCW, fuck them.
Yay.
Good. They're gone. He says the only thing that is still around is the WCW title that The Rock has, and it will now simply be called the World Championship. And he promises a lot of dramatic and drastic changes tonight. Those were both delivered upon. And says that someone is going to join the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club tonight with one member of the Alliance who will be willing to do so and therefore get a job with the WWF.
Yes. It is also here where he mentions that all the champions in the Alliance have retained their contracts.
Yep.
Yeah. So completely, I mean, it was just promised that everybody in the Alliance would lose their jobs. But then this little caveat was just thrown out there. Oh, by the way, all the champions have been retained. So that included the Dudleys, conveniently, basically almost...
The Rock was... How does The Rock work? He has their title, but he's with the WWF.
Oh, he's a WWF contracted guy
Christ.
Anyway. But this included Stone Cold. This included Christian.
RVD.
RVD, basically all the important people.
Who had the Cruiserweight title? I don't think they even mentioned it here.
Yeah, that was... combined with the light heavyweight title that Tajiri held, I believe.
Tajiri had it.
Yeah.
All right. He says that tonight when Steve Austin shows up, he's going to execute his plans. And then he points to the empty announce seat and invites Paul Heyman down to the ring. And Heyman is now wearing a WWF baseball cap. And he goes to sit next to Ross and says, "I got away with it!" And he enters the ring after Vince summons him in. And Vince says that he is a First Amendment advocate.
Uh-huh.
The man who confiscates your signs is a First Amendment advocate.
The guy who doesn't want you to say wrestling.
Yes, he says that Heyman is fired, and Heyman gets upset and wants to fight Vince. And Vince then takes his blazer off, and he's ready to go here. But then instead, Heyman goes after Jim Ross, and Jim Ross beats down Heyman and calls him a son of a bitch. Jim Ross is able to make a lot of stuff great, and this was an example of that.
Yeah.
Seeing him, I don't know what it is, but with Jim Ross, I always give them the benefit of the doubt that he doesn't know what's happening, and he just goes with it, and that's why it works, because it's a legit happening for him.
Or perhaps he's just a great actor. He's a guy who can take a script and
he just rained down like fists on Heyman and yelled at him, and then Heyman was escorted out by security, and Vince says, "Come on down, Jerry the King Lawler." Mm-hmm. And Jerry Lawler makes his huge return to the WWE after leaving in February of that year, but a divorce later, he's back.
Yeah, and just from thinking about the man's situation, it's really nice for him to be able to get his job back after quitting and, you know, not having things work out for him.
Yeah, he was pretty much caught in a real shitty position. They didn't want to get rid of Lawler.
No.
It was his wife they wanted to get rid of.
Yep.
And here this guy walks out on the company because of his wife. And then problems persisted and the wife disappeared and Lawler was like, "Well, time to go back to work."
Yeah.
And well, they took him, so yeah. Great. Good for him.
It's very nice of them to take him back. I will say, however, for me, at least, I noticed a real change in Lawler's character coming back from this point, because prior to him leaving, he definitely played more of a stereotypical heel commentator. Whereas from the point where he came back at this point, it seemed like he was a babyface forever. You know, he still had did the whole puppies deal, but, like, was not, for me, not as entertaining anymore.
Yeah, he definitely didn't have that heel persona after this. It was a noticeable change around here, but it was sort of growing. I mean, Lawler, as he got older, I mean, it was hard for people to, I guess, I don't know. It was just their decision to make Lawler more of a likable with Jim Ross, mm-hmm. and the two were more presented as friends rather than two guys arguing over stuff. Maybe they got tired of Ross and Heyman being such polar opposites that they wanted the announcers to be less antagonistic towards one another.
Yeah, it could be.
So we go to the first matchup of the night. Trish Stratus defending her women's title against Lita. And early on, we see a spear by Lita, and she gets a two count. And they recapped from the night before where Lita was with Jeff talking about Matt's odd actions of late, and then Matt would come out of the locker room, talk to them, left, and then Trish came out of the same locker room.
Ooh.
And Jerry said, "I've been gone for a while. Does everyone change in the same locker room now?" And Jim Ross said, "No, they don't." So what was Trish doing in the locker room with Matt?
I don't know. It was also apparent to me, too, that Lawler really wasn't watching anything in the time that he was away.
He had no clue who some of these people were on the show.
Who's that guy?
Stacy. So we see a catapult to Lita into the ropes. Big sign in the crowd that read, "Got Flair?" with a question mark.
Hmm.
The answer was yes. Lawler offers to have a kiss my ass match later tonight with Trish or Lita, if either of the women are willing to. It took them all of 4 minutes to be scary and creepy. Big boot by Stratus, who then misses an elbow drop off the second rope, and then Lita gets tossed to the floor off of the top by Trish and follows up with a baseball slide that sends Lita into Matt Hardy, who is in Lita's corner. And Matt is all discombobulated here. He doesn't know what's happening, and he just lifts Lita, sends her into the ring, and Stratus is able to hit a backslide and pin Lita, 2 minutes and 45 seconds, and they play up Matt unofficially assisting Trish here for the win.
Yeah.
What's going on with Matt?
Is it ironic that it is Lita here who is the one suspecting Matt of cheating?
Well done.
Is that irony?
That might be.
It might be. Okay.
That's well, there a good go. One.
Yeah. What eventually happened with the storyline? You know?
Yeah, they broke up the Hardys and they fought at the pay-per-view, right? The next pay-per-view.
Oh, wow. It was that quick, huh?
Yeah. Three weeks after this.
What was the outcome of this whole Matt and Trish and Lita deal?
Went nowhere. In fact, they did like an angle the following year where Trish hooked up with Jeff.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it just seemed like one of many sloppily done splits with the Hardys.
Yeah, they split them up, they had a match, it didn't work, and then they put them together, like, the following month.
Yeah, it could have been so much more, but I guess it really took a while for these guys to break off, and it took a real love triangle for them to gain momentum.
Yeah.
As single stars.
We go backstage to the locker room, we got the Dudleys with the tag titles, Tess, Christian, Stacy, and RVD. Vince walks in. Third time we've seen him tonight. Purposely keeping count. Says he holds no animosity against any of them. And he's going to make a handicap tables match tonight with RVD against the Dudley Boys. So everyone leaves except for Christian. And he says how proud he is to be the European champion. And Vince just utters. He's like, that title means shit. And he goes to shake Vince's hand. And Vince just tells him, get out of my sight.
Yep. There you go.
So there you go. Test, who had won the Immunity Battle Royal, he's got a job for a year here with this company.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to RVD against the Dudley Boys in a handicap tables match. And this was the fun where Stacy was accompanying the Dudley Boys. And Lawler is curious about Keebler. He asks where she's from and says, I assume it's not from the Virgin Islands.
Ah, ha, ha, ha. Boy, did I miss.
Because she gets fucked a lot, is what he's implying. She likes sex, so she couldn't be from an island that is named after people who don't have sex.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Lawler. Where is Paul Heyman? So RVD hits the Rolling Thunder to Devon and then takes a Bubba bomb and then a nasty set of chops from Bubba. We see a neck breaker by Devon out of the corner, and then they bring the tables into the ring. Huge chance here of RVD.
Boy, was he over.
He was the Zack Ryder of 2001. That's not fair, because RVD was someone that could have really been a top-end guy.
He was in a comedy character. Honestly, like I just think back to that Raw, SmackDown that they had.
It's one we always talk about.
And the ACC, where RVD was more over than Austin at the time. And they had a match that evening, and everybody wanted RVD.
RVD
to
went
win.
Over.
But he didn't win the title.
No. They had some non-title match.
Yeah, yeah. But
I remember like a half hour before they even had the first dark match, they're chanting RVD in the arena.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Like, and you have no idea how over that guy was. And especially if you've only seen him in TNA. I mean,
yeah.
Holy shit.
It's especially...
How much younger did he look here?
Oh, yeah. And thinner and quicker,
I know it's
too.
Been 10 years, but still. Holy crap.
I think it's especially amazing considering, like, looking at this alliance roster of all the people that they brought in for this angle, not the WWF people that would eventually defect to the alliance, but the actual original alliance people, like all the WCW people and all the ECW talent. None of them were over at all. I guess Booker, okay, and maybe the Hurricane, but
Booker was someone they made a comedy guy. Pretty much right off the bat.
Absolutely. Whereas RVD, the complete opposite, way more over than he had any right to be. So let's see how they pushed him.
They put him in this handicap match, and Devon gets sent to the floor. RVD hits a Van Damminator to Bubba, and then a spin kick puts Devon onto the table. My God, Devon just has this problem of taking offense and landing perfectly onto tables. It's amazing. He's got a skill. He just has he's very unlucky when it comes to his landing.
Yeah, he doesn't like to touch the floor. He likes to be elevated. He
just puts himself into a straight line on a table, horizontal to the target coming off the top rope. So RVD climbs to the top rope, and there were two tables set like diagonally coming out of the corner, and Devon was on the far one. And Van Damme dove over the first table to the second table with Devon. Devon got off the table And I think Van Damme's jaw broke this table. It looked horrendous. He went face first through this table.
The table was very far.
Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah, God bless him for wanting to try it. But, you know, the way the camera's cut, though, you wouldn't be able to tell.
Oh, it looked painful.
At least the table broke.
Because then they had to set up the finish, where D-Von gets up and Bubba goes for the 3D onto RVD. Table does not break.
Does not break.
Nope. I mean, this was like a sign from God that this was not the finish you should have booked.
Yes.
The wrong guy is going to lose here. But they go right back to the exact same move and break the table. 4 minutes and 27 seconds. And God flipped the channel off of TNN.
Yeah. Well, RVD's big.
Why was this was so reminiscent to me of Zack Ryder's booking last week against Del Rio. Only Van Damme, way more upside in 2001. Ryder's got... I just don't see him ever being a top guy.
Ryder's a comedy guy.
But someone who's over. Oh. Who the crowd has gotten behind without the company deciding we are going to push this guy.
Yep.
It's the crowd that said, we want this guy.
And if you push them seriously, I mean, you know, take him through the steps, I think he can be a totally believable mid-card contender at this point. And if you pushed him as a serious threat, he could totally, become a world champion one day. As of now, though, he's a comedy character. RVD, on the other hand, from day one, he was perceived as, you know, a legitimate great wrestler who's he was ready. He was definitely ready. It's just so perplexing because now you finally have the chains off of RVD, because for the longest time he was in the Alliance as a pseudo babyface amidst a group of heels. Now those chains are finally off and you can go full blown babyface with this guy. And it's clear that their intent is to push him. Why else would you put him in a handicap match? You want to push this guy as, you know, an underdog, but I don't think the Dudleys advance following this, and Rob Van Dam certainly didn't advance following this.
Just stalled him for me.
I feel like you could have put RVD in here against another tag team, any other tag team, and have Rob go over, and that'll totally begin his push as, you know, in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. And, 6 months after, RVD would go into TV, and they would say, what do you feel like saying tonight? Do you want to say whatever, or do you want to say dude?
Mm-hmm.
That was his promos.
Yep.
You're going to be, what do people who smoke weed, what do they say? whatever. Yeah, dude. Awesome. This character. Man, we can go far.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids love pot.
Kids love pot. Yeah, absolutely. What if he became like a marijuana activist? What about that character?
A marijuana activist. I don't know how well that would translate.
He is a marijuana activist. Doesn't he have his? Does he own have his own brand of weed?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Maybe not.
The five star frog stash.
Wow, that was just on the spot there. Well, thank you, John. Fantastic.
Kurt Angle arrives backstage and he tells a production assistant that he single handedly saved the WWF, and he asks where The Rock is. He points to him. And he walks off and he calls the PA a dork.
This was the other, I guess...
I hate this version of Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Hate it.
This was the other, I don't know, perplexing part of this show. Last we left Kurt Angle, he was turning on the Alliance to rejoin the WWF by helping the WWF win. So in your mind, you're thinking, wow, this guy has been playing the evil bad guys all along. He must be a good guy, and he's a good guy. But he walks in here, and he's still a heel. And it seemed like this was what
the jarring. It was like, what's going on here?
It seemed like, I mean, in the end, this is what I guess the audience wants. I mean, they want Austin to be the babyface, and sure, you know, that makes Angle the heel then. But it just made no sense from a writing perspective. You just never do this. It just, like, you know, if you have a man in a scene saving a purse from an old lady's robbery, anyway, terrible example, but it's just like, you know what I'm getting at. It's just, to me, it's just sloppy writing.
I just, I don't understand. Kurt Angle was the first example to me of someone who the team just got, just thought, oh, this guy's so funny and we can do all this comedy shit with him. And I think it really hurt this guy. And people will always look at, oh, The Rock did comedy. The Rock was never a comedic character. He could deliver comedic lines, but his delivery was... The Rock was never, to me, a comedy character where the joke was on him.
Yeah, he wasn't the jester. Like, he wasn't the clown. The Rock was the guy who would make fun of people with full confidence in himself. He was like, you know, the cool guy who would pick, you know, make fun of other people. Yeah, that's cool. You have to be taken as a serious person. Angle, on the other hand, would be the butt of the joke. And that's something that's not, doesn't work for a main eventer.
Yeah, like, you just wonder of, you know, if The Undertaker came along today, what they would do to that guy. Would you have confidence that 20 years from now, this character that they introduced would have such resonance and staying power? I just think they would do the weirdest shit with this guy. They'd get tired of him after 6 months because, oh, he's, you know, he can't talk.
Yeah.
Can't do promos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a completely
Let's do
different.
Some graveyard gimmicks with him. Let's do some comedy with this guy. He's alive.
They wouldn't do that character today, though. They wouldn't. I don't think they would. Can you think of an equivalent? Something someone as cartoony as The Undertaker was?
Mordecai. Remember him?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Boogeyman, all those ECW guys. But, well... I don't know. I don't think they.
Kurt Angle is a dork. Yeah. Not very good. Linda McMahon is at WWF New York shaking hands with fans. This looked so forced. Hi, how are you doing tonight? I'm Linda McMahon.
Yeah.
The Rock is in his locker room. Angle walks in.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking the people at the restaurant.
Who are you?
Yeah. Why are you shaking my hand?
You know Vince McMahon. Why can't he come? Yeah. All right. Angle walks into The Rock's locker room. He wants a thank you from The Rock. Just complete backpedal into his heel character as this goof. Rock says he didn't need his help last night. And Angle, it's basically revealed here that he went undercover for 1 month with the Alliance. And then he laid them out with chairs. The WWF team. He laid them out with chairs over the past month. He attacked The Rock. And Rock says, you were selfish for your big moment. And Rock challenges him to a match. Angle wants it to be for the title. And Rock says that Angle may have a lot of people fooled, but Rock will never trust Vince and never trust Angle. And they do this big, extreme close-up on Rock, as Angle is called an asshole by The Rock.
What The Rock essentially did in this segment was bring up all the problems with this storyline. Here, their job now, following the pay-per-view and Angle's babyface turn, is to using these backstage segments to reinforce Angle's heel status again. And they do that in this case with The Rock pointing out all the inconsistencies in this storyline. So you turned your back so you joined the Alliance undercover and you decided to attack us for all those months, all those weeks. So how am I supposed to take you seriously? Why would I like you after that? And despite the stupid writing, I thought The Rock did a great job trying to, you know, put this over.
But this really, as you said, just emphasized how stupid this was. It was like them trying to write themselves out of a corner.
Exactly. Like they had the end goal of having Angle as a heel, I suppose. But it maybe they didn't. I don't know. But it was just constant writing back and forth. And then
it's too bad because when Austin did turn, it did leave that top babyface position open with The Rock going away to do a movie, and Angle really did. By that, you go back and watch that match with Angle and Austin at the SummerSlam that year. I mean, he was really over as a babyface. He had dropped all the comedy, and people were really taking to him. And this period of booking, I thought, hurt him so much.
And then you had the September 11th stuff, and where he had that match in Pittsburgh as well.
I mean, he was a giant babyface at the time. He wasn't at the level of an Austin or Rock, but I thought they had really tapped into something with him. And it was this just was so very counterproductive.
Yeah.
A car shows up. It's Shane and Stephanie, and it's revealed that Vince requested that they show up at the show. So we've pretty much seen everyone of substance that was fired last night is back.
Yeah.
Vince is in the ring, number four, brings out Shane and Stephanie without music, and Vince says, "I can't describe how proud I feel to have a crowd calling my daughter a slut."
And I don't even think the audience wanted to chant something so vulgar. You didn't really hear many chants. I'm not going to call your daughter a slut.
You're a whore. He's probably thinking of merchandise ideas as he was doing this.
Mm.
Shane says that he lost to the better man on Sunday, and he leaves. And then Stephanie...
Well, Shane wouldn't reappear after this for another 2 years. That's an extended absence, I'd say.
Good.
Yeah, this was good. This was simple and a big contrast to how Stephanie would exit.
This was like they are already planning on bringing Shane back as a babyface down the road.
Absolutely.
And where would he show up? Was it that Vince Hogan match at Mania, right?
Yeah, to check on. Was it against Hogan?
It was. He came at the end of that. So that would have been... 2003
okay.
came back, but they never went anywhere with that.
Yeah,
they teased like Hogan and Shane at one point, and
they probably changed their mind many times.
So, Stephanie, oh
God,
this was horrible television.
Well,
Okay.
In what way? What would you say that?
I think she's horrendous. I think she's a horrendous performer.
Yes, but I think it works for her character. Because she's supposed to, like, to me, I look at her like I do a Vicky Guerrero. The moment when she speaks, okay, not as convinced, not as good as Vicky, okay? More annoying than Vicky, I suppose. But she has the same quality in her voice with her very annoying voice, so that when she speaks immediately, the shrill in her voice is enough to get heat itself. And I think that is the job of a heel. You want to get a big reaction, and she did that.
Yeah, I guess you can debate. I mean, what elicits a reaction from people with Vicky? I feel like it's just great heel heat. Whereas Stephanie, I think people legitimately just don't want to watch this person.
Sure.
Like if this was to culminate in a pay-per-view where she'd be put in a position where she'd be humiliated if she lost, I don't think anyone would pay to see it.
Yeah, yeah. She's and that I'm sure like has a lot to do with the overexposure as well.
Yeah. She blames Shane, says he caused everything. He made her slap Linda. She says, "I'm young and I'm naive and I'm the head of the creative team." And that when she told Vince that she wanted him to die, that was also Shane's idea. And that Vince is the better man and a genius. And Vince calls for security and Stephanie is escorted out.
Yeah. Well, God, just to hear her recap all the stupid things they did in this terrible, terrible storyline. It was
the part where she talked about, you know, I was roped in when Shane bought WCW and made me buy ECW. I was like, oh, how can you even say that and pitch it as an idea? Like, let's have Stephanie buy ECW and run it.
Yeah, it sounds disgusting to us, but to the McMahons, or to even storyline writers, I could see them thinking that it was a good idea. It's uniform.
I think that's what everyone hated, was that this huge storyline just became the next chapter of the McMahons fighting.
Yeah. It played absolutely, like...
Here's our new chess pieces we bought, and it's all under the McMahon umbrella.
The McMahon feud... And eventually, the overall feud of the invasion played no part in the history of these three companies. You know, so as a wrestling fan, you dream all these years of seeing this feud between these three companies, but when it finally happened, it had nothing to do with the history of the companies.
Go to break, come back. Fifth appearance for Vince McMahon on this show. He's on the phone stating that someone in the Alliance will be getting a job after they kiss his ass tonight. And then Chris Jericho walks in. He says his ego got in the way Sunday night after he got eliminated and came back to attack The Rock, his teammate, and he apologizes. Vince says he doesn't like people with big egos, but massive egos, he likes people like that. And then he makes a match with Jericho and Kane for later tonight.
Yeah.
Which would turn out to be punishment. Mr. T is shown in the front row wearing a 1-800-COLLECT shirt. Hmm. Remember when people used to call collect?
No, actually.
Neither do I. Now we text message.
Yeah. I'm sure it still comes in handy. I think I've called collect once. I ran out of quarters.
Yeah?
I lost my phone.
Did the person accept your call?
Yeah.
Who'd you call?
Probably my uncle or my dad, I don't know.
Rock versus Kurt Angle for the world title. These two are... They always worked really well together. Mm-hmm. And here in a TV setting, they didn't have quite a lot of time.
All these top guys at the time, I thought they always gelled.
As bad as 2001 might have been from a creative standpoint, yeah, it might have been their best year in the...
'02.
Yeah. Even from 2000 to 2003. Yeah. I mean, and you could even stretch that into 04 when you had Benoit with the run. Like, there, you got some awesome in-ring stuff during those years, even as they fell from that peak period of the late 90s and into the new decade.
Basically before John Cena came around.
Yeah, it was the Cena-Batista era. Yeah. I guess the ring work somewhat took a bit of a back step on the main event level. Rock hits a Samoan drop and then would mount him with punches. Angle sends Rock to the floor and gets the heat, dropping him with a suplex and then a belly-to-belly after Rock blocks the ankle lock. Lots of chance of Angle sucks here as Rock makes his comeback, but Angle cuts him off, hits three Germans in a row, and then Angle gets crotched on the top rope as he's going for a moonsault and is suplexed off the top. Rock hits a spinebuster. Angle counters the Rock bottom and hits an Angle slam. And he goes to put the ankle lock on, but Rock rolls through and rolls up Angle. 6 minutes and 9 seconds. And he pins Kurt Angle to keep the title.
Yeah, good match from these two.
Yeah, this was good. All the setup for the post-match attack by Angle. But it ends with a Rock bottom. And Rock is standing tall when Jericho runs in and attacks Rock and hits the... What do you call the? They just double team Rock here, and Angle applies the ankle lock. Jericho puts on the Walls of Jericho, and he lets go. The officials are trying to stop him, and then he puts it on again. So,
I thought Jericho came across really well in this post fight beatdown. They're of course beginning his mega push towards the Undisputed Championship right after the Survivor Series. At this point, I thought his turn at the pay-per-view when he attacked Rock after being eliminated from the team was really effective. And doing this afterwards by putting the Walls on the Rock two times following the match, I thought worked really well for him.
Vince McMahon is back.
Sixth time.
This was number six. And he welcomes William Regal as the member of the Alliance willing to kiss his ass. And Regal comes into the ring. He says, okay, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to compliment you? Do you want me to grab your bags and carry them around? And Vince says, no, no. I mean it quite literally. I want you to kiss my ass. And no one was more excited about this than Jerry Lawler.
Oh, my God.
He was... I think if a woman had gotten into the ring and teased taking her top off, Lawler could not top his excitement for his boss taking his pants off and another man kissing his ass. Jerry Lawler was a little child here, which makes it even more creepy.
Yeah, he was. He was definitely teetering and oftentimes crossing the annoying border. I thought he was really excited to be back, and it showed. Maybe a bit too excited.
Yes, we had the literal and the figurative kiss my ass segment here.
Yeah. Well, you know, keep in mind, there's probably nobody back there to direct him with Vince out there.
It's true. Vince is instructing Regal to bend down on his knees and pointing to where he needs to bend down, and Lawler says, if Regal bent down on the wrong end, he'd get poked in the eye.
Yeah.
By Vince McMahon's penis.
Yes.
In the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we got
WWF.
Got one of those. Well, they could put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
Put that joke on a t-shirt.
It would be seen Vince's penis.
Okay.
Vince unzips his pants and has his briefs on.
Could you imagine
Yes, I can imagine this happening because I saw it.
No. I mean, it's one thing for somebody to walk in on us watching this, but think about the people walking outside of our booth right now listening to us have this conversation.
What are they talking about?
Vince takes off his pants. We get paid to do this, John.
Yeah.
We get paid to talk about men taking off their pants.
He then passes the chapstick over to Regal, and he applies the chapstick. And then he says, no, wait. And he pulls his briefs down to reveal his bare ass. Now, I realize that I'm going to take a giant leap here. But in terms of just building this segment, just the way he did it, where at first you tease that Regal is simply just going to come out and figuratively kiss his ass. He says, no, you're going to kiss my ass. And then he pulls his pants down, and then he builds it, saying, no, you're not going to kiss my briefs. You're going to kiss my bare ass. This was a train wreck of all train wrecks.
Was it?
I don't know. I guarantee you, if people were flipping through, they were stopping on this.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon's ass hanging out on television as William Regal leans in and kisses Vince's ass.
Yeah, there you go. Well, watching this back, I like this.
Oh, God.
We can talk about it, what you thought. But I thought it was an entertaining thing to watch that stood out amongst the show. You know, you can, I guess you could argue about what it achieved for the characters, about what it achieved for a pay-per-view. And the answer is nothing. It did nothing for these characters. But as something that made for exciting television, yeah, I was watching and like took part in. We all remember this is the end point that I'm trying to make. I thought Regal was perfect in this role. I thought he did fantastic with his facials, with his you know, the way he delivered his lines to McMahon. And I thought Vince was great as well. I thought these were two good performances given what they had to do. And hey, for what it was, I thought it was well done, and I thought it was fun.
I would have loved to have been the PA informing William Regal of his tasks for tonight's broadcast.
No, maybe Vince himself went to talk to him.
So we go after the break. Regal is in the back, freaking out at all the assistants around the gorilla position. And then Taz walks up to him, and Taz calls him a kiss ass.
Oh, God.
And Regal beats him down.
Boy, I thought that was lame.
This was...
What a kiss ass.
It's weird. It's like they have this thought of, okay, we're going to humiliate this guy to this unheard of degree, and then we're going to turn him into a monster afterwards. Just seems like counterproductive. Either he's going to be a joke, or he's going to be a monster. Well, I don't think you can do it both ways. What? He's the ass-kissing monster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, when you think about it from that perspective, Regal's stock definitely dropped following this. I wouldn't say it was... Yeah, well, yeah, never mind. I thought Taz, though, just looked so uninteresting at this time. He was, like, already, you know, pretty much a full-time commentator and wearing his hockey jersey because he was out of shape. And I just was not compelled. He wasn't... I couldn't buy him as the, you know... suplex machine intimidating Taz anymore.
Well, they made a good argument for you to remember him as the human suplex machine Taz later on in its match.
Okay.
They did lots with him.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho and Kane.
Yes.
Let's talk about this match.
Sure.
First of all, these are two men that, listen, Chris Jericho is a fantastic worker.
Yeah.
Very, very good. There are some guys that just don't work well together for whatever reasons. Maybe it's just something in the chemistry, the size, some awkwardness, whatever it is. These two were not built as pro wrestlers to ever communicate, to ever work together. They just do not work well together. They had a feud in 2000 that began over a cup of spilt coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And this lasted numerous pay-per-views. It was one of the most ridiculous feuds. And then tonight, this was relived. And what a match this was, for 3 minutes with an epic post-match. It started off with Jericho hitting this swinging neck breaker, which I can only guess was what he was attempting to do here. I think Kane thought he was doing a backslide. The way he took this, I don't think either had any idea what the other was doing.
Yeah.
He then goes to hit his lion salt. But Kane is rolled out way too far, and therefore, I think, broke half his ribs from Jericho's knees. But then Kane grabs his throat for a choke slam, and Jericho hits a low blow and then a follow-up bulldog. And then Jericho grabs a chair but takes a big boot and a power slam from Kane. Kane goes to the top rope, but Jericho swings the chair upon Kane landing, and the DQ finish is called at 3 minutes and 6 seconds. A few weird spots, whatever. It was a 3-minute match. But then things got nuts. Because Jericho goes for the Walls of Jericho after the match. And Ross notes that Rock is getting medical attention and therefore can't make the save. And Jericho can't get the Walls applied on the first attempt. So then he tries again. And he falls. He falls trying to put the Walls of Jericho on.
Falls face first.
So he tries a third time. And gets it applied successfully. And he lets go. And in the back of the mind, he is thinking, shit, my deal now is that I put the walls on twice. So he has to go do it again. And it looked horrible, to the point that Jim Ross even points out how bad this looks. Just terrible coordination.
He just couldn't hook the legs underneath his arms. And I guess the problem is Kane is just not a flexible enough guy, and Jericho is too short to be able to hook his legs up in that position.
So for the fifth try, Jericho goes for these Walls of Jericho, and sure as shit, Jericho is going for this horrendous-looking version of the Walls of Jericho, as Jim Ross says, does he want a death wish? Does he want his career to end? The head of talent relations dropping a very cryptic message here. This was a horrible, horrible chemistry here.
As much as I thought the Rock beatdowns have done very well for Jericho, this Kane beatdown really was the complete opposite. A total failure trying to put this hold on Kane.
Oh, go back and watch this, everyone. Don't even worry about the match. Just watch the post-match. Kurt's in the back screaming about no one appreciating him, and he goes up to Edge, who's on a cell phone, and he wants a thank you. And Edge points out how he has two titles, the US and IC titles, and therefore he saved his own job. And he thinks that Angle was playing both sides. And he says, after you got eliminated, you only thought of yourself, and that's why you helped the WWF. And they continue plugging Steve Austin showing up later in the evening, but he has not arrived yet.
I really like the segment with Edge, more so... Not in performance-wise, but more so from a storyline perspective than the Rock segment with Angle, because I thought the points that Edge brought up were actually convincing me that this guy should be portrayed as a heel, because he's absolutely right. Angle could have been playing both sides this whole time, and depending on who was coming out on top in the actual match, would have gone to that side. I think that's a totally legitimate point to apply to the character to make me dislike this guy. So
Edge's delivery was so different back here.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it.
Well, Kurt, let me tell you something, biatch.
Yeah, what's that? Yeah.
William Regal and Taz. This was an impromptu match, and therefore Regal was competing in his dress shirt and pants. Taz attacks Regal, and they brawl in the corner back and forth. Ross says there's a rumor that Taz has been retained as a broadcaster on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
What did I pay for the night before, is what many a fan asked.
Yeah.
There was so much pyro from Taz's entrance that it completely clouded the arena.
Yeah, the smoke...
This looked horrible.
The smoke just filled this whole place.
That's where I think the crew made the official decision. Okay, no more pyro for Taz. Regal just gets him down, puts him in the Regal stretch. The human suplex machine. Beat me if you can, survive if I let you. Taz tapped out in 54 seconds, and Regal would not let go of the hold after the match, and then finally does.
I don't know what the point was of even giving Taz that little mini push coming out of the Alliance. There's no reason for it.
Was this a mini push for Taz?
Well, he defected from the Alliance, and there was some attention put on him.
Yeah. Commentator.
And he just went back to work and as super friendly Taz again.
Yep.
With no, I don't know, no misgivings about this whole thing.
Angle is sulking in the locker room when Vince walks in for the seventh time. And he pouts about no one thanking him. And he's hurt. Hurt Kurt. And Vince was going to show him his appreciation. Says, how would you like to be the WWF champion? Yeah. Angle says, sure. Let's go to the ring.
Yep.
Let's make it official. Just like that. How did Vince get this belt?
He probably had an extra one. Maybe they just make new ones every time.
Maybe he bought a replica.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Vince and Angle walk down to the ring, and Vince thanks Angle and calls him a hero. And he says Austin is being typical Stone Cold, not showing up the night after a defeat. Wait till the next year.
Uh-huh.
Says they need a champion with class, dignity, and credibility. And they need Angle as champion. And they were hoping Austin would be here so he could strip him of the title. And then Ric Flair's music hits and Flair comes out. We talked about RVD aging over the past 10 years. No one has aged more than Ric Flair in the last 10.
Yeah, that's understandable, though. I mean, the man's already
went
here.
From 52 to 62.
Yeah.
It's a big jump. Mm. But, my God, he just looked so much just in better... overall mm-hmm. shape here at 52.
I guess comparing what? 42 to 52?
There was a bigger decrease from 52 to 62 for Flair.
I agree.
42 to 52.
Yeah, I agree with that, sure.
Crowd is going nuts for him here in Charlotte. And reveals that when Shane and Stephanie sold their WWF stock to a consortium when they launched WCW and ECW, that the consortium was Ric Flair. All this time, Ric Flair has owned half of the WWF.
Yeah.
And he chose now to show up.
Yeah. Did he ever explain why? Why he waited till now?
Well, he says, I bet on a winner last night.
Yeah, meaning he...
He had WWF stock that could have been worthless if he had lost.
Uh-huh.
So he announces that him and Vince are partners. Austin's music hits, and he comes down and he attacks Angle, takes down Vince, and stomps on both. And it ends with Austin and Flair in the ring, and he takes the title off of Flair's shoulder and puts it onto his, and they have a beer together. And Jim Ross sells the shit out of this closing angle. Jesus just debuted.
Absolutely. JR was fantastic on the show.
He was great.
I think we, you know, at the time, you see him every week, you kind of take him for granted. But after not seeing him for so long, this was JR doing a really, really good job. And just like that, Steve Austin is a babyface again. From March till November, this heel run lasted. And just like that, he's a babyface. No real explanation given. He just to show up, let the audience cheer him, and attack the bad guys. That's it. I have to wonder how long they planned for Flair to come back, under this storyline.
That deal was only finalized that weekend.
Really?
Like, they had been talking because he had a contract with WCW, and mm-hmm. they had to work this out with Turner to get him come in. So, and I think it was only finalized, like, that Saturday or something. So, it wasn't something long-term.
Yeah, and I guess there's no way they could have brought him in during the Invasion. I mean, there could have, but I guess they didn't want to pay and that. Whatever, that's the other thing. But as a way to inject Flair into a current storyline, I thought this was clever. Clever use of, an existing storyline.
They did a lot on this show.
Oh, my God. Boy,
they blew through a lot, and it seemed that they just wanted to distance themselves from the the stench of the Alliance yep. as quickly as possible. And I don't know, you watch this show and it was just to me jarring how many turns yeah. and how many things have just why are all these people being rehired back all of a sudden? There's no wait period.
Yeah.
It seemed that all you were missing were the WCW mid-carders, but all the key people were back. They yeah. didn't miss a show.
This was a big reset button to reestablish the status quo prior to the invasion. You had really the only addition you had going forward from March until now was the addition of Rob Van Dam. Everything else was just kind of like it never happened. A very packed, but I have to say, an entertaining episode of Raw. I thought all the segments were pretty entertaining and the matches were good. So
8 yeah. appearances by Vince McMahon on this show.
They weren't boring.
I can't say I was as big a fan of this show. Okay. I just found it to be incredibly overbooked at times and just, I just got a feeling of this was simply, this is not our plan coming out that we had planned. It was simply, okay, look at all these problems we've booked. How do yep. we get out of this?
Yeah, it just seems.
How do we get out of this?
That just seems like the way they write their TV is like always fixing problems. They're just a bunch of different solutions and not so much creating.
Yeah. So in that regard, I didn't enjoy this show as much. But let's see what you guys thought about this because we did get a handful of feedback to this Raw episode. And do you want to start us off, Way?
Yes.
Christ, is this internet slow?
Alexander Rios. My God, watching Raw as War from November 2001. To me, this was a total reboot of the WWF after the invasion, much like that infamous episode of Monday Nitro a year or so earlier. Anyway, onto the actual show. I can't say I remember too much beyond the classic moments that have been the show. That have been shown over the years, like the birth of the World Heavyweight Championship, William Regal literally kissing Vince's ass, while looking at hindsight now. Sure, it is embarrassing and humiliating, but at the time it was hilarious. Stephanie getting thrown out, kicking and screaming and throwing Shane under the water. Jim Ross on Raw is a plus in protest of his... Jim Ross on Raw is a plus in and of itself. And Jerry Lawler's return from his quitting the... in protest of his wife getting fired, only to be promptly dumped. Okay. I'm sorry, but I enjoyed Paul Heyman then and now much more than Jerry Lawler. Honestly, I've never truly enjoyed Lawler on commentary. At least I forgot the retarded mishandling of Kurt Angle where he went from heel to babyface, to heel to babyface, and back to heel. And Stone Cold Steve Austin's face turn happened just because the fans popped. It's not like he did anything on TV to officially turn. But it's just as well since the Austin heel turn, by his own admission, was unsuccessful. And finally, the amazing pop I had for Ric Flair coming back, even if it was months and months late. I swear to this day I will never forget the moment where Flair proclaims himself as Vince's business partner. And Vince yanks on his ear. The face he made was priceless. Well, yes. There we go. Thank you for your feedback, Alex Rios.
We'll move over to Paul Sayer. From what I remember from this Raw, the return of Jerry Lawler after a 9-month break, which I can confirm did happen on this show. Even though the Alliance feud was over, I had a feeling knowing the WWE they wouldn't tie up all the loose ends from Survivor Series. For example, nobody explained that the Hardcore Champion and Tag Champions would keep their jobs. Even when Stephanie was thrown off screen by her dad, I knew it was only a matter of time until she would be back. And she did when Triple H returned and she became Jericho's manager. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, she came back months later.
Oh, boy.
Oh, remember that build-up for that Mania?
Yep.
The worst main event build-up ever.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Kiss My Ass segment. Just William Regal's facial expressions alone sold it for me, and was somehow I still find funny today. No matches stood out to me, but the closing segment of the show reeled me back in as Ric Flair returned. I was interested to see what they would do with him, but coming in as the co-owner made sense as Shane and Stephanie sold their stock to buy WCW and ECW. I think they rushed Flair into WWE and could have made a bigger impact. Mind the pun. How would you have brought Flair in? I give the show 6 out of 10. Guys, keep up these reviews. Gets me through my boring days traveling to work.
How would you have brought Flair in?
The leader of the Alliance, cutting promos, going into these pay-per-views.
Yeah, but being unable to bring him back with the Turner contract.
still had the Turner contract when he came in here. I mean, they spent the money to bring him in here.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, well, that makes no sense then.
Yeah. I didn't even mind this way they brought him in. I mean, it was something you went off Raw with a real big angle and Ric Flair coming in.
And
so.
I think the way they portrayed it, they portrayed him as an equivalent and counter to Vince. And he's Ric Flair is somebody you could definitely accept in that role, both in age, in personality and character. So I like that.
Both have had questionable financial ventures.
Sure.
Outside of wrestling.
Wouldn't Flair turn heel after this? That made no sense. He would turn heel. He would turn heel against Austin after this.
Yeah,
he
that's
became
right.
like the heel GM
yeah,
of Raw.
They started to turn.
Anyway. David Banks, this Raw will be remembered for a lot of things, but I want to focus on the face turn of Stone Cold. Now, when Austin was out in 2000, he said numerous times that he wanted to come back heel. So after they turned him at WrestleMania 17, he continued to get over like a face. From teaming with Triple H or beating down JR and even aligning with the Alliance, he was still getting over. The fans just couldn't boo the guy. He was entertaining and his what got over huge. So at this Raw, they had to turn him back face. This also marked the end to an angle that could have made huge sums of money for the WWE, but also, in my opinion, ushered in an era of great matches and angles for the next couple of years.
Mike Still, I remember the show really well. I had first started watching WWE regularly in 2001, and we'd always have a room full of friends to watch Raw every week. Now I'm the only one who still bothers. I'd never watched WCW, so I had no frame of reference for any of the invasion talent, and I was just happy to see the reset button get hit. Despite Austin and Angle turning back and forth 100 times in the last few months, it felt less like heel babyface turns, But just that, when everything was reset, people just naturally resumed the roles that fit best. The crowd didn't need to be told to cheer Austin, they were just going to do so anyway. I had no idea who Ric Flair was at the time, but all my friends who lived through the Monday Night Wars groaned that this old asshole was back to hog the spotlight. Little did I know he'd be one of the most entertaining performers to watch for the next decade. Mm-hmm. Well, forget the next decade, how about the prior two? I mean, Ric Flair, does that take a lot of convincing on people? Like, geez.
Craig Allen, I hadn't watched this episode since it originally aired. I assume the storyline was that Shane and Steph sold to Flair months ago, because them selling the previous night wouldn't have given Flair any power since their team lost. Yeah, the story was that, I guess Shane and Steph sold their stock in the WWE to afford ECW and WCW. Anyway, as for this show, I thought Stephanie groveling was really good, and Angle and Rock had their typical fun match. RVD versus the Dudleys was something you could turn on Impact and see currently, so nothing has changed with them. Jericho is booked strong, even though he had a rough time getting the walls on Kane. Speaking of blown spots, how bad was that first spot with Trish and Lita? Final thought, I enjoyed the storyline of Angle going back heel after the Survivor Series. I thought the character was justified by thinking he deserved more thanks/respect. For, in his mind, saving the WWF. Like you guys, I hate it when any company turns a guy repeatedly, but I felt that wasn't that bad since he had reasons a good heel would think was right in his mind.
I don't know. The way they did it with Angle, where he came across much more as like this crybaby rather than some heel that feels, that he's not been given his proper respect. Yeah. I don't know. Didn't work for me. Mark McCreath, after recently watching a Raw when they did nothing in 3 hours, it was good to watch a Raw when they did everything in 2 hours. At this time in the UK Monday night, Raw didn't air until Friday at 9 o'clock and then repeated at 3 a.m. I was 21 at the time, and me and my friends would watch the 3 a.m. Raw after being out drinking all night. Watching this Raw back sober 10 years later, I have no idea how we followed what was going on. Thought it was funny at the start when Vince said hello to JR and waved at him, and then went on to embarrass an announcer that wasn't JR. How times have changed. I enjoyed this show with the Angle face heel storyline and the Angle Rock match. I also enjoyed watching Raw without John Cena in it. If I could suggest, he wants to get a future review with One Night Only, where Shawn Michaels beats a member of the Hart Foundation in his home country. All right.
Greg Brown, this episode is as true to a new season as wrestling as there could be. RVD's Frog Splash, head first through a table, still ranks as one of the most brutal-looking bumps I can remember. Vince and Regal's performances in the Kiss My Ass segment were both sensational. Only in wrestling would an owner do ass tricks and want it kissed by an employee. Like it or not, it's a memorable segment. When this happened, I had no idea about the significance of Ric Flair to wrestling, as I'd only seen him wrestle Sting in a t-shirt on the last Nitro, so I was less than impressed when Flair popped up on Raw. Going back and watching the segment now as an educated fan makes me appreciate Flair much more. Vince's ear-pulling face is a classic visual as well. Watching back at the time makes me miss performers like Paul Heyman, seeing an RVD who actually looks like he wanted to perform, and simply having a good 7 to 8 top card guys, unlike nowadays where you have Cena and Orton, and hopefully CM Punk to reach a similar level in the WWE's eyes soon.
Daily Brennan, you know, the booking on this show can be picked apart as much as we like, but watching Raw from 2001 does remind me of the things I miss from this era. Good work in the ring, more believable characters, and by extension, matches to care about. However, a world title and a tables match on the same show that aren't in the main event, it's true that too much was given away.
Steve Kassan, I won't bore you guys by reciting what has already been said. Just 3 small observations. King was so slim and energetic back then. Same with JR. So full of life on commentary. I miss the old Raw Metal intro. It spoke true about the chaotic nature of each episode. And speaking of themes, Lita's theme was outstanding to me. I would hold it up there with Stone Cold's Rock and Hogan's Real American.
Oh, yeah.
Lastly, Wow! Brought to you by Gundam. Proof there was a time where Gundam was huge. Personally, not a Gundam fan.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for your feedback. You can always go to reviewaway.com whenever we've got a show on the go. We always put a thread up there, and you can post your thoughts, and we will read them.
Yes, we will.
All the time. We love feedback.
We'll read every single one.
So that is going to bring us to a close here on the show. So thanks to everybody for checking it out. We're going to be back on Friday with Review and Impact. Might have a bonus show this week. I don't want to guarantee it right now, but maybe we will. We just might on Thursday.
Cool.
We'll see.
Okay.
Impact coming up on Friday with Nate Milton, and then the big one, Saturday, Sunday, noon to 5 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be at the International Center for the MMA Expo. It's $15 to get in. If you come by the booth, if we got shirts, you can have a shirt, a sticker, and be a guest on the podcast with us. It's going to be a good time. And if you are not in the Toronto area, where can people listen, Way? Worldwide.
You can listen on stickcam.com/reviewaway, R-E-V-I-E-W-A-W-A-I, or you can just go to reviewaway.com and click on the Listen Live tab on the side.
So lots of ways you can participate, even if you're not going to be at the MMA Expo, but we encourage you to come down and be a guest on the show. It'll be a lot of fun. We're going to be dead by the end of Sunday, so that's always something to look forward to. It's going to be like watching back in the day when they taped Nitro and Thunder in the same night, and you would see how people were at the end of Thunder.
Wow.
Because they've sat through so much. What are we, me and Way, going to sound like Sunday from 4:30 to 5 p.m.?
Oh, that'll be the time to tune in.
That's going to be the best time.
Oh, yeah.
We might die.
We might be at each other's throats. Talking about who knows what. Abortions.
Yeah. Abortions. So much we can chat about, Way.
Yeah.
But next week, what are we going to chat about?
Next week, we will be chatting about ECW's November to Remember 1995.
Yeah, we forgot about it in November.
Yes. I know some of you have requested us to do more ECW shows, and in particular, November to Remember. And I decided to pick the 1995 edition because it just features an amazing, amazing roster in ECW at the time. For your main event, you have Mikey Ripwreck taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin for the ECW. Oh. Never mind.
That's not on the show?
Well, it is on the show, but it's a spoiler.
Okay. Well, we don't want spoilers for a show that happened 16 years
hey,
ago.
Hey, listen, Steve Austin's on the match. Cactus Jack teams up with Raven against Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer. You have Rey Mysterio taking on Psychosis. You have just a ton of great stuff, so I'm looking forward to this show.
All right, next week, the 1995 November to Remember. Way's request there. And we're going to go out, everyone. I'm a big fan of Christmas music, and this past week, I had a car that was not mine, and it had XM radio in it, and I had it on Channel 17 the entire time, where they play nonstop commercial-free Christmas music.
Wow.
And man, have I heard some awesome Christmas songs. Ones that are kind of outside the periphery, not your typical Mariah Carey or Bryan Adams or John Lennon. We're going to go out with Beat Street Santa's Christmas Rap featuring Treacherous 3 and Dougie Fresh.
Wow, okay.
Some mad rhymes to end off Review Away. This song is awesome.
Excellent.
And that's what I want to end it off with. Follow us on Twitter, at Law Radio, at Way0937. We'll chat with you later this week.
And, yes.
Goodbye.
All right, you people, get ready to cheer for the Christmas show at the Burning Spear. All you hip-hops are in for a treat, because Santa Claus is on Beat Street.
Ho, ho. Open up your door. I'm Santa Claus, and guess what, y'all? I got something to show. I came to bring some Christmas spirit. I got a big bag, now guess what's in it? Something for the rich and something for the poor. So Merry Christmas and ho, ho, ho.
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas, my foot. I'ma tell you what Santa really put under my so-called tree, but in reality, look like nothing but a decorated pole to me. Man, you talk about a tree, it makes me wonder, cause I never had a tree to put anything under. If I ever did luck up and get a tree, there was never anything under it for me.
Man, y'all should be glad that I didn't quit, cause I'm getting too old for this Santa Claus shit. Y'all think I'm getting presents made for free? I gotta pay them mails, and ain't nobody paying me.
You big fat whale, you might as well quit, cause I can name 100 presents that I didn't get. And if I did get a present, it'd be a hand-me-down. Yo, I got this for Christmas, now how that sound?
It sounds good to me, cause I'm about to freeze. You wanna see something? Look at the bottom of these. Me and my brothers can't go out at the same time, cause the coat that's theirs is the coat that's mine.
Man, I know one thing, y'all better get off my neck and wait till you get your welfare check. Go on down to the office and stand on the line. Better hurry up, see, I got mine.
Jingle, jangle, jingle for the boat. And once he gets your welfare check,
y'all can kiss my mistletoe.
That's why the presents keep getting mixed up. Cause year after year you keep fucking up. And now I know why, cause you're always drunk. Instead of G.I. Joe, you send me this junk. That ain't
a G.I. Joe, that's a G.I. jerk. With a kung fu grip that don't even work. So all I did was just put him away, cause my G.I. Joe looked G.I. gay.
That's why you don't get presents now, cause you're just in grace. G.I. Joe's gay, what difference does it make? After all, he's just a doll, ain't too much he can do. If you ask me, boy, I ain't too sure about you.
Listen, Bloto, with your big fat suit, next time say no, don't send no substitute, because I asked you for a beatbox and you know what I got? Dougie Fresh, you know that kid from down the block.
Must admit, Dougie Fresh is good and made a perfect fit. He's the only reason why we weren't totally mad. Without Dougie, our Christmas would have been really sad.
We'll sing Silent Night and Jingle Bells and all those Christmas rhymes. Cause nobody gives a shit about the rainy and hard times. You just jingle and jangle and hang out with the folk. And when you get your welfare check, you buy rainy.
Fresh and magnificent force and head on out the door and leave these party people singing jingle jangle for the